The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, April 10th, 2023.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She does everything you do, because the woman in your life is you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holt, and I'm your host. And with me at the board is my producer, my partner, my engineer, and my best friend, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Elaine. Glad to be back.
Oh, I know we missed you. Ken was in Los Angeles, Arcadia, actually, visiting with his mother and his Aunt Joan, who celebrated her 99th birthday, which is an amazing feat. So happy birthday again, Aunt Joan. Well, I have a very special guest for this show. Joining me on the phone will be Camarina Schwartz Davidson, who's the president of the California National Organization for Women. For me, this is a very important interview with the history of now and, you know, acknowledging Dr. Polly Murray, who is also involved with the National Organization of Women. And, you know, it's very interesting when you do research and you find out all these different things about what people are doing and what are saying. I saw that Dr. Polly Murray was very, very instrumental in bringing forward the National Organization of Women when it started. She had a little bit of frustration about it because she felt that there were too many white women, and she was an African-American woman, and she eventually dropped out, but she dropped in later on. And, you know, it's really interesting. One of the quotes that I got from her, what she said was, if one could characterize a single phrase, the contribution of women to America, I think it would be survival with dignity against incredible odds. And it's true. I mean, we're surviving and surviving and surviving, but at the same time, everything's in jeopardy. And I'm just stunned about what has happened over the last week. You know, we had a horrible, horrible shooting in Tennessee where three young children, 9 years old, were shot down by a young woman, a transgender woman who had actually gone to that school. And at the same time, the Tennessee legislation, about a week later, you know, they had a big protest, a huge protest, and the protest was about getting some gun laws in. And what ended up happening, and I'll have more information on it next week, was three of the legislatures were put up to be disqualified from their government in that state. And it's just such a slap. I just don't understand what's going on. And the reason they were disqualified or they wanted to be thrown out of the legislation, to put it quite bluntly, was because they stood with the people who wanted better gun controls. You know, and I also found out that Tennessee in last year around August made the hardest legislation around getting an abortion in that state. And here they won't make gun laws. I mean, I just don't understand that. I mean, we talk about the children, you know. I remember when we were here in Sonoma County, they were legalizing marijuana, and everybody was screaming, "Oh, you can't put the marijuana by the schools because the children. We got to protect the children." Well, Jesus Christ, marijuana never killed anybody, but guns do. And I don't understand why this is happening. I don't understand the consciousness. I can't help but say perhaps it's men who are a little bit outdated, who don't understand what women need. I mean, I can't believe a woman would stand up against another woman having choice. I mean, that would be beyond me. But it does happen. I mean, don't get me wrong. I see it all the time. But there's a lot to think about. I mean, our children are our future. And we must think about that. You know, we must organize. We must come out in the streets. You know, I'm a grandmother. I'm a grandmother and a great grandmother. I mean, there's three generations coming in because of me. And I'm appalled I'm appalled that they will not do anything about gun rules, about legislating gun laws, but they're running after with abortion and protecting the fetus, but yet when the child comes out, there's nothing for them. I mean, what is that all about? And I was also thinking, I was in church Sunday, and we were celebrating, you know, Easter Sunday, you know, the resurrection of Christ, and everything's supposed to be changed. I mean, the Prince of Peace supposedly died for their sins. And, you know, I don't understand that. Did they die for the sins that they can make for eternally, or did they die for past sins that they were trying to start a new way and get a fresh start, so to speak? And I think that's what we need. We need a fresh start, a very fresh start. And, you know, in talking with Kanarima Schwartz-Davison, who's the president of the National California Organization for Women, you know, we've had a very in-depth conversation, and I hope when I interview this morning that we can get into this a little bit. You know, NOW is a very important organization for women, and I really want to encourage women to get out there and join organizations that support the right of the child, that support common sense gun laws, and to get rid of those AK-15s off the street. I mean, I don't understand what is happening in our country there. We do not have love. Our principal position, it feels like to me, is hate. Hate you because of the color of your skin. Hate you because you're poor. Hate you because any other little thing they want to put on you. And I just, it's so confusing for me. Children are suffering all over the world, you know, because of wars, because of guns, because of killing. I mean, is that the human race's whole ideology, is to just go out and kill each other or kill anything that's in front of them or kill anything that they don't like? I mean, there's a lot to think about. That is for sure. Well, you know, something very interesting happened to me over the weekend. You know, Ken was gone, and I was just researching all kinds of different movies, and I couldn't believe it. But they actually on Netflix once again they are issuing the 4th of July, which is the story of I can't remember Kovac's first name. But it was a story of a soldier who was a young boy who was born in a small town, and he was born on the 4th of July. And actually on the 4th of July, he thought all these different celebrations and everything were all about him, you know, and he's very excited. And I was watching, I decided I didn't want to watch it. Then I said, okay, I'm going to watch it. And then I watched the beginning of it. And what was so interesting to me is I really saw the indoctrination of how they indoctrinate young men to go to war. You know, they make it like it's this hero, like they're going to be doing something great. You know, they're saving their country, they're going to war, they're sacrificing their lives. But when they get there, it's horror. It's just horror. It makes no sense to me. Why, as human beings, why do we do this to each other? I ask this to myself over and over and over again. I know sometimes I get mad at people, but I have no idea to kill them. You know, there's something going on. I would really recommend people watch Born on the 4th of July again. It's on Netflix, just to get a feeling of what war is really like. It's not this gung-ho hero. It's men and women getting shot on the battlefield. It's men and women coming home with no legs, no arms, inability to see. And it's also men and women coming home oftentimes with no support, no medical support that they need after the war. It took until the Vietnam War, and I remember this very well, where they first decided to acknowledge that soldiers came back with PTSD. It was once called shell shock. But it took eons before they finally accepted the fact that this is what it does to young people. But Born on the 4th of July really tells the story. Oh, it's Ron Kovac. My memory all of a sudden it just goes Ron. It was really very interesting to watch the movie, to watch him as a young boy, and to watch the degradation that happened to him. And then to watch the fact that he became so active. He became an anti-war person who really created a strong, strong movement. I mean, back then, I remember, you know, protesting, leaving classes in school. Why were we doing that? Because we wanted the war to end. And here we are, 2023, Ukraine and Russia, they don't know if China's going to join. I mean, all these things, it's very, very scary. You know, I was watching the kids. Here it is, Easter Sunday, you know, the resurrection supposedly on the Prince of Peace. No, 90% of the people don't even understand what they're celebrating. And I understand that. I understand that when Ken was in visiting with his mother, he went on Good Friday. And I was brought up Jewish, so I have no idea what Good Friday was. And he explained it to me. It's when that's when they crucified. That's when they. Oh, was it Good Friday they crucified him, or was it Saturday they crucified him?
Good Friday.
Yeah, they crucified him on Good Friday, and they go through this whole ritual about how he went to the cross, and then he gets on the cross, and all the different things that happened. Of course, the women were there with him, which is always, and it's from what I understand, a lot of the people that were following him all of a sudden decided to say they didn't know him. And here we are some 2,000 years later, and we're still celebrating it and supposed to be celebrating about forgiveness and forgive your sins. And, you know, he died for our sins. And I think our biggest sin is that we can't get along with each other and that we war with each other. You know, they say that, if you know, having sex outside of marriage is supposed to be this horrendous thing. Well, I think killing is much more horrendous than having sex outside of marriage or having sex when you're not supposed to, when you're a young boy. I found out that if a young boy has sex, it's kind of worse. It's in line with killing somebody. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me. And this whole abortion thing. You know, right now they're saying that the children are dying a lot younger. You know, they're being shot. You know, schools are being, funding is being cut. You know, that they're threatening Social Security. They're threatening Medicare. They're threatening Medi-Cal. And yet at the same time, they're rah-rahing all over the place about not, you know, bringing no abortion, no fetuses, you know. And do they forget that the fetus turns into a child that has needs? Well, that's quite of a rant, you know, and I don't want to keep going on, but I'm just so frustrated, to be honest with you. I'm just one frustrated woman about this. I mean, life is beautiful. Life is beautiful. I saw that during Easter Sunday. We went to two different occasions of celebrations with family. We went to church. It was all about love and compassion and caring about one another. And at the same time, I couldn't help but think of some of the things that are going on. So my request to my listeners out there, start thinking about these things and start asking yourself, what can I do? How can I stand up? How can I help make it a better world? Especially people who call themselves Christians. If you call yourself a Christian, you're supposed to be honoring and believing in the Prince of Peace and love and compassion. Well, lots to think about. So we're going to go into our history as our strength, because why is that so important to me? Our history tells us what people have done. It acknowledges what people have done. And also it gives us courage. It gives me courage when I think of some of the things that the women that I talk about have done. You know, I'm going to talk about, we have a lot of birthdays. It was really interesting. When I look on the National History Alliance, and I get a shout out to Molly Murphy McGregor. She always has these great lists of women and what they accomplished, either they're alive or people that have already made their transition. And this week, it just seemed there were lots of birthdays. So let's go over some of these birthdays, which I think are very interesting. On April 10th, that's today, but back in 1838, and this woman died in 1950. That was Lucy Higgs Nichols. She escaped slaves. She was an escaped slave who served as a nurse in the Union Army during the American Civil War. Can you believe that? Here this woman was an escaped slave, and she was nursing our soldiers. Amazing. And one of my favorite, one of my heroes, H-E-R-O-E-S, heroes, who was born also April 10th in 1880, and she made her transition in 1965. That's Frances Perkins, the first woman cabinet member who was the Secretary of Labor in 1933. And she was the key contributor to Social Security Act and the Fair Labor Standards Act. And what's so interesting about Frances Perkins is that when she was just early out of college, she became a social worker. And she happened to be walking home or going down to the subway. I don't remember exactly what it was. And then all of a sudden she saw the Triangle Fire happening, where the women were working in this factory and they were jumping out of buildings from the fire. there because they were locked in. That what they used to do in those days before there were unions is they would lock the women in, and then when the shift was over, they would let them out and check their bags to make sure, listen to this, that they didn't steal any material or sewing needles. And when she saw this in her mind, she said, I'm going to do something. And when President Roosevelt appointed her as the Secretary of Labor, the first thing that she wanted was Fair Labor Standards Act and Social Security and also safety in the workplace. Thank you, Frances Perkins. Oftentimes, she's like, to me, sometimes she's an unsung hero. Another person that was born in on April 10th, and she was born April 10th, 1926, and she made her transition in 1995, was Johnny Tillman, director of the National Welfare Rights Organization. She did that from 1963 to 1972. She actually worked with Gloria Steinem and Aileen Hernandez on Women, Welfare, and Poverty. That was a book at the National Women's Conference in Houston in 1977. Now, this was really very interesting, this National Women's Conference. It happened. Let me just read this to you. 57 years after winning the vote, over 200 delegates gathered in Houston, Texas, in November 1977. It was a federally funded conference and was the most purposely diverse and demographically representative group ever assembled in the United States. Each state sent delegates to debate proposals promoting equal rights and ending discrimination towards women that they could send to the president and the Congress for action. And that was very interesting. I believe President Jimmy Carter was president at that time, and he sent his wife to also help. And I believe that Carter was the last president that actually put energy into women's rights and having things like this happen, especially to have a national conference. And if you watch a movie, there's a movie called Mrs. America. It's on Netflix. It's on Hulu. I'm sorry. It's an amazing film. And it talks about what happened in the 70s and 1977. It shows you the struggle that women went through. And the most amazing part of it was that with the lesbian group, they were trying to oust them. And, man, these women just demanded. They wanted equal rights just like every other woman because they were women. And that's the most important thing. I'm a woman. I'm all women. You know, and we need rights. We need to be at the table. And right now what's happening is they would love to see us just disappear. But, you know, if we did disappear, there wouldn't be any children in the world. So I don't know if that's a good goal for you guys. Well, another celebration here is very, very interesting, and she's still alive, and she's one of my favorite people. I've interviewed her, and I've talked to her many, many times, and that's Dolores Huerta. She was a Chicana activist, a labor organization, and she is the co-founder of the United Farm Workers Union, and she also now has the Dolores Huerta Foundation, where she helps women and children with their needs, and also particularly children with education. I mean, there's just so many women to be proud of. You know, I love when I read the history because I see what they've done, I see what they have accomplished, and I say to myself, if they can do it, so can I. You know, so there's one other person I thought was really interesting, and that's I try to be as diverse as I can, you know, to find white women, black women, Chinese women. You know, here we have a Native American woman, and she was born on April 11th, 1910, and she made her transition in 1997, and her name was Annie Dodge Wanaka. Elected to the Navajo Tribal Council from 1951 to 1978, and she worked on the tuberculosis academic using Navajo and the Bureau of Indian Affairs ideas, demanded funding for children's health programs. Look at this, all the way. Here we are still, 1951, she's demanding for children's health programs, and she was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom. What an honor, you know. Annie Dodge Wanaka. And, you know, Native Americans, when you think of a Native American woman standing up, I mean, that's really hard. I mean, usually they've been really put to the back of the bus, you know, and say, hey, The heck with them. But they're very important, just like every woman is. And, you know, as women, we bring forth the children. You know, all of us. You know, if you're a woman and you have children, you know, you are actually the mother of all children. Now, why do I say that? I mean, oh, doesn't that sound corny? Elaine saying that we're the mother of all children. No, think of it this way. If your child can be shot in school, anybody's child can be shot in school. So you have to take care of all the children to make sure none of them are killed in schools. And that's what's happening right now. And that's what's happened in Tennessee. Three 9-year-old young children. And you know, I remember 9 years old was such a magical time when I was raising my daughter and even my granddaughter. You know, that's the time they start picking out jewelry and they start wanting to know, you know, they know what they're going to wear and they start fighting with you because they want this piece of clothing or that piece of clothing. And you can have conversations with them. And they're really into school. They're more proficient in reading. It's such an exciting time. And they're developing. They're developing into young women. And here some human being who is able to get a gun can go to a school and kill a child. And we are resisting. We're resisting common sense laws, which I think are too weak. But at least if we had that much, it would be great. But they're resisting. Why are they resisting? What is their problem? Is a gun more important than your child? Is that what it is? Is money more important than your child? Is that what it is? I mean, think about it. Just think about it for a second. I don't think we think about it much, because if we did think about it, you might be a little crazy like me, you know, and talk about it and try to educate people and try to inspire people to do something. Write a letter to the editor, you know. Talk to your city council members, your board of supervisors. They're not kings and queens. They're people voted in to serve us. That's the whole idea of a country, a democracy, that we can vote our people in. The tragedy is that sometimes they're in too long and we can't get them out and they do so much damage. It's just amazing to me. Well, that's a lot to think about, and I think that's what Women's Spaces is all about. Thinking. Although I'll tell you, it gives me a headache sometime. And I have a confession to make. When I was watching July, the Born on the 4th of July, I just wept like a baby. I cried. I says, my God, we were laying in the streets to end war, and we're still warring. I don't know. Maybe it's too deep in our DNA. Well, we're going to take a musical break, and the song I'll be playing is, I think this is really a great song, you know. And I love this song. There's this song that we sing in Unity Church, Let There Be Peace on Earth. But to me, it's for church, you know. And I always wanted to find that song that somehow we can take it out of the church and just put it into this mainstream. And I found this recording by Lizzie. It's just a single. In fact, I'm going to research her. I'm going to find her. I'm going to have her on the show. I want to talk to her about this song. I did the research and I found that the song there, Let There Be Peace. And that's it. Let There Be Peace. And so we're going to go ahead and we're going to sing that and we're going to play that. And when we come return, I'll be spending the rest of the hour with Camarina Schwartz Davidson, the president of the California National Organization for Women. And I'm really looking forward to it. So let's go ahead, Ken, let's play this song and then we'll get Camarina on the line.
And let it begin with me. Let there be peace on earth, the peace that was meant to be. The earth as our mother, children all are we. Walk, my sisters and brothers, in perfect harmony. Take, may this be my solemn vow. begin with me.
Yes, let there be peace on earth and let it begin with me. What a song. What a thought. Why is it so difficult? I just don't understand it. For you just joining us, I want to remind my listeners the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of the station, its board of directors, its members, or Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You are listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And without further ado, I want to introduce my first guest. Joining me on the phone is Camarina. Good morning, Camarina.
Good morning, Elaine. How are you?
Oh, I'm so happy to have you here. Well, Camarina Schwartz-Davis is the president of the California National Organization for Women. And I'm really, really excited about her. Through the years, feminist perspective evolved, recognizing why we need intersectional feminism to understand how facts elap and require more equitable strategies. Now, through the position as president of California Now, Camarina works to build exclusive committees where all voices can be heard. What an amazing goal, Camarina, and thank you. Is it okay before we start if I just tell my listeners just a little bit about you?
Of course.
Let's go back. Let me go back here. You know, we're live here in Santa Rosa, so it's kind of interesting. It's kind of interesting. Camarina is the president of the National Organization for Women, the California. Actually, does every state have a regional director like this?
Not every state has one, but most states have at least one chapter. We have a few of them.
In California, we have quite a few chapters, but you kind of oversee the whole thing, right?
Yes.
Well, through the years, her feminist perspective evolved from reorganizing why there is a need for intersectional feminism to understand how facets overlap and require more equitable strategies. Now, through her position as president of California Now, she works to build exclusive community where all voices can be evaluated. Camarina has worked in nonprofit sections for over 15 years, both as an entrepreneur and as a leader directing communications for nonprofit organizations. Her most recent assignment is with We Spark Cancer Support, where her primary focus is on communication and outreach to raise awareness about the organization. Is there anything you'd like to add?
No, I think you covered it nicely.
Well, good. I'm glad. Yeah. I mean, you have quite a resume, you know, and sometimes when I try to shorten it, you know, I don't feel like I get everything in that I would like. Well, let's start out, Camarina. Talk about your early beginnings in the women's movement. Who was your role model? What was your inspiration? And what were some of your challenges?
You know, when I grew up in the 80s kind of time frame. So at that time, you know, people who were inspiration, you know, Sandra Day O'Connor, of course, was of great inspiration since she was on 1981, of course. And then we were also like that generation was also inspired by Sally Ride because, you know, she was the first woman to do that. And it would seem like if she can do that, everybody can do whatever they want. And then when I began to see things that continue, because at that point I was in high school and I was very involved and wanting to be involved more, particularly after the Supreme Court declared that sexual harassment is a thing and people could be sexually harassed, because even as a young person, I had already been experiencing that. And I wanted to change that, and I didn't even understand why it was happening, which is when I first came to Now, because at the time, even though I was very involved in what our current events were, and we would talk about it, we had this one history class that our teacher would want us to bring in history, current events, and talk about them. So it kind of started me, like, really thinking beyond just my high school, beyond my world, because, you know, we didn't have the internet then. So we had to get newspapers and find out what's happening. And so that kind of like my peers were not as enthusiastic and as outraged at some of the things that were going on. And then later when I found now in high school, then I really was thrilled because I felt like, oh, these are my people. These are the people that know what I'm talking about. These are the people that care about the things that I care about. So yeah. I, of course, was in awe of all of them because I was so young, but we were going to like demonstrations and things like that. So it was just exciting time.
I want to ask you a question here, and it's very, very interesting that you actually were a high school student. You know, one of the things that's happening now with women's organizations, and I know you can address this because I know that now is struggling for memberships all the time. What are some ways that you believe, being a former high school student who got involved with now, what are some of the ways that you think that we can try to attract more young people?
I believe going where the young people are, getting them engaged because they are out there. And when I do, because I do a lot that I do with my work at WeSpark is outreach, but also in my role at California now, it's also outreach, going to the community, meeting with people where they are, like in schools, colleges. So I always manage to find ways to incorporate both of those aspects of my current life. But if you find them, you'd be surprised that they are willing, they're open. And recently, I met a young woman, her name was Emily, at an outreach event that I was, and she's a high school student, and she wants to study design and art. And she knew all about now, which I was surprised because I thought, you know, you always have to introduce them. But she already knew all about NOW because she had a aunt who is a member of NOW. So I said, hey, would you like to work on a project with us? And she loved that idea. I think because they're there, they're able. So you really have to look for them and you have to go find them. So a large part of what California would like to do now is finding these places and helping chapters find these places to go and outreach and meet young people who would want to participate. In the beginning, it might be like a specific project, but as they see the value of and they understand, because I think some of the young people don't understand that some of the rights that people fought long ago and we had, and now they're being diminished at a rapid rate, they don't understand, like, how terrible it will be if we don't fight for this.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I've submitted a proposal to Sonoma State, and I'm going to put you on the spot now. Maybe when I can meet, maybe there's a way that you could come and meet with me because I think it's important that we get the universities involved.
Absolutely.
Well, now you're talking about NOW. Give us a little background about NOW. You know, it's really interesting. I try to always have folks I try to encourage people to watch Mrs. America, which I think is just fascinating because it not only tells the story of the women's movement, but it also tells the story of the resistance that Phyllis Shackley had. I mean, it's an amazing, amazing movie. Mm-hmm. It covers a lot. But tell us a little bit about NOW. What do you believe is their mission, and why do you feel they're still as important as they were way back when?
So, you know, a national organization started in 1966 because, you know, there was a lot of movements at the time and there was, like, women trying to make this happen. But I think the same reasons of what they were doing, I mean, they were just trying to get, you know, women to be able to have jobs and to have their own money. I mean, very basic things that they started off with that they had to put aside some of the things, which is a big criticism that feminists have about NOW, that they thought they needed to be very careful of the issues that they sought to, like, you know, they wanted equal pay, which we're still struggling that. They wanted the ERA, which we're still struggling to do, which seemed like a very small thing rather than, like, look at the whole of what we really needed to do, because in the beginning there were included, there were white women, but there were also black women who were also who had been struggling. Because if you look at the history of struggles, it is people who have been historically marginalized who are often right at the front of these movements, because they, in essence, don't have anything to lose. And there are people that were LGBTQIA involved as well, but we decided that the organization decided that, well, we're going to focus on these issues and then later work on them. But what makes it problematic is that they didn't go right back, that it needed more pushback. And I think for the same reason that we're still doing it now, that understanding that you can't have feminism without having intersexual feminism, which is the error that they made in 1966 of putting aside some of these other critical things. But now, as you know, we have six core issues that we focus on, which is, one is reproductive justice, ending violence against women, racial justice, LGBTQIA rights, economic justice, and of course, constitutional equity. So while we focus on these core issues in general that now does, things sometimes overlap, which is becomes the intersectional part, that you can't do one without understanding how the interconnectedness nature of categories such as race, class, gender, sexuality, and ability, and how those overlapping systems of discrimination occur, particularly for women, because as women, we're already in a certain class that we're already at disadvantage. So if you have any of the other...
I think sometimes the problem is that there's too much separation. You know, white yes. women, black women, Asian, you yes. know, rich, poor, mm-hmm. you know, not seeing ourselves as women, you know, and what, mm-hmm. in my perspective, whether you have children or not, it doesn't matter. That somehow it's through our bodies that life come through, and that there yes. should be a little bit more, you know, you look at these old ancient sculptures, you know, with the women with the big bellies and all that, like mm-hmm. demonstrating pregnancy. And that seems yeah. we seem to be losing sight of that. And I can't quite understand it. And I can't quite understand why there's so much around, you know, the fetus, the choice around choice versus, you know, it's okay to, here we just had these shootings with these children and they're not going to make gun control. You know, there's so much confusion about it. And mm-hmm. how do you feel that now tries to address that, to bring bring women into the fold, to see that, hey, we have a responsibility?
Yes, we do have a responsibility, and I think we do care about, as women, we do care about everything. Of all the ills that are in the world, we do care about them. But the reality is that we need to select what we can focus on as priorities, as things become more important. Not that the other things are not important. Of course, gun safety is important, and while it's not specifically under one of our lists, but it does hit on like how it impacts racial justice and how we are been struggling for so long to stop violence against women. So it's like all of those things come together. And I think what many chapters have done have focused on things that, you know, everybody has the one thing. We all care about these things, but everybody has one thing that they feel more strongly about, and then they focus on that one thing. But the reality, even by working on one thing, it impacts other things because we are so connected as human beings. Everything that we do affects other people. Things they do affect us. And we can see that more clearly and easily in the crazy legislation that people have been trying to pass in the last few years.
Can you believe what happened in Tennessee, that they dismissed those? And not only that, what's so interesting, there were two young black men that were elected, and they are so articulate. I mean, such brilliance. And here because they stood up with the people to get some gun control in, you know, I mean, that is a really, that to me is a very bad sign. But I want to get into this one thing, what you were talking about finding that one thing. What is it that you at this point in your life are the most passionate about that you think is so important?
For me, and I think I was passionate about it even when I was in high school, because I understood that, like, that having bodily autonomy and reproductive justice became such an important thing. If I could not control my own body of when I, if I would choose to have children or not, I do have a daughter, but I made that choice myself. And I am very happy to have made that decision. And I'm very glad that I had the ability to decide to have my daughter. And I think that is at the core, that by deciding when you have children, or if you do have children, it's such an impact in women's life that if you can't have this, which I think it's a very small thing because it's your personal body and it's your personal experience. And I'm very, very against other people trying to control people's bodies. I think if you don't have bodily autonomy, you're not free. You don't have any freedom. It doesn't matter what you get paid. It doesn't matter what you do, because you can't have, and that cannot be good for the person to not have that basic human right of autonomy.
Well, Carmen,
over their own body.
Carmina, let's hold that thought. I want to take a musical break. Is that okay with you?
Yes.
We're gonna play a song by Earth Mama. I hope you enjoy this one. And it's called We Are Made for These Times, because these are the times I think that women are struggling even more than we struggle to get some of the stuff in place. There's nothing worse than having to struggle to keep it in place. I mean, it's just amazing. So let's go ahead, Ken. Let's go ahead and let's play that a song by Earth Mama, We Are Made for These Times. And when we come back, folks, we'll be continuing our conversations with Carmenina Schwartz-Davidson. She is the president of California Now, the National Women for Organization, the state of California. And then we will come back and finish this conversation. So go ahead, Ken.
Sun or snow, fog or rain, not silent.
we are made for these times. I mean, if we haven't gotten strong enough by now, nothing's going to change. Anyway, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces. I'm your host, Elaine B. Holt. And with me on the phone, joining me on the phone, is the president of the California National Organization for Women, Carmen Maria Schwartz Davidson, and we are talking about now and just different issues on about women and women's productive rights, actually. Well, before we start, on the next part, there's one thing you mentioned in the back. You talked about the intersectionality in feminism is very critical. First of all, can you give us just a little definition of what you mean by feminism and what you mean by intersectionality?
So the definition of intersectionality is the idea of the interconnected nature of different categories, social categories, such as race, class, gender, sexuality, and ability. So the overlapping of these categories and or facets are what create a discrimination or disadvantage in our society, mainly because I mean we have the patriarchal society, which makes a problem for it all. So if you look at this and you understand, oh, okay, this impacts this person, we are all impacted because we're women, and we are impacted because the patriarchy creates problems for women, as we've seen. But also, if you are a woman who has a disability, then you're impacted even further, because it's not just that you're a woman, but now you have a disability. So then you don't have the same advantages as somebody who doesn't have those, like a white man who doesn't have that ability. And then if you have somebody that is a white man, and but they are like member of the LGBTQ, then now they're at a disadvantage because of the way they are perceived by society, again, a patriarchal society. So that's what that means. So when you look at feminism now, we want to look at feminism and ways that we can sort of create equity by making sure that when we create events or we have people have a meeting that we are collaborating, that we try, it's not an easy balance to do that, but we try to invite speakers that have different experiences so that they can present a different kind of point of view for our members that are attending or the public who's attending an event, so they can see, oh, this happens to these people and this happens this way for other people. So it's not the same. So I think as leaders, as particularly feminist leaders, you have to really look at that and say, this is, I want to make sure that we work on making sure that we have inclusivity in our events and inclusivity and when we build the events, that we know, hey, this would be fun for these people. Hey, they do this. Wouldn't it be great if we incorporated that? Because it becomes a more inclusive and more meaningful way, because people feel like they are being heard. And if they're part of the organization, we should bring all our ideas together, because not one person is going to solve the problem. It's a collective of individuals that actually do much better,
you know,
in solving
problems. And you know it's very interesting. We just went through the Easter season, and I belong to a group called I Go to Unity. It's a spiritual organization, and you know, for the 40 days of Lent, they go and this year was letting go of negative thinking rather than a piece of chocolate. I think it's not easy to let go. Well, I cheated when I first got the book. I says, you know, I'm going to look and see what is it. My birthday was March 18th. And it was very interesting because what came up for on that day was to let go of judgment. And I looked at it and I thought, judgment, you know, and it's exactly what you're saying, is get to know somebody, get to become involved with them before
before you make a judgment of whether they're right or wrong or whatever they're doing is not in tune with you, because you find that even though people have different ideas, when you come together as a collective working, say, towards peace, towards women's rights, etc., all that should fade away because you're just working together. So I think it's, mm-hmm. I think that's very, very, very interesting. But, you know, I'm just looking at that clock, which makes me crazy. And I want to ask you just to go and talk a little bit about this. And are you only 20?
No.
Because you said there's one question. You said, what makes you hopeful? And what advice would you give your 20-year-old self and to women listening? So what makes you hopeful? And what advice would you give that was younger women that are listening?
You know, what makes me hopeful is the young people you can say, oh, the young people are not doing their part or they're lazy, all these things people say. But when I meet young people and I interact with them and just talk to them about what they're fearing, what are they doing, what do they want to do, what is their hopes, it gives me hope because they are listening, they are in tune to what's happening around the world, and they have no hesitation in trying to do things. They seem bolder, particularly the young women, in trying to effect change and trying to make a difference. But it's a very different way that it's, I think, because they didn't grow up when our generation grew up, or my generation and your generation, that it makes them freer to like just be fearless and take the movement further. So I think that's why we see a lot of changes, and we keep changing the language, which is sometimes hard to keep up. But I think it's because they do see it, that it's important, and we have to, like, see them as, like, humans and people that are going to continue the movements that are critical for everyone.
Well, we just have a few moments left here, and I would like you to give us your website and how they can get a hold of you, and maybe one little quick sentence about your We Spark program.
Oh, yes. Yes. So
just real quick.
California Now is CANOW.org, and they could reach me at president@canow.org. And about We Spark, we do supportive services in LA for individuals impacted by cancer. So patients, yes, but also the family members and their loved ones, because cancer impacts all. All our services are free, and we hope you never need them. But if you do, we want you to know that we are there. And the website for that is WESPARK.org. So
just a reminder that all these different emails and information will be on Women's Spaces on www.womenspaces.com to make sure that they can get a hold of you, Carmenina. So we're at the end of the segment here, and I just like any last words, anything that you would like to let the audience know that you're thinking, and just anything that you it's on your heart.
So one thing that's on my heart is that we're having a state conference on May 20th, and we would invite everyone. It's going to be online and virtual event. So it's going to be in West Hollywood, but it's also going to be virtual for individuals who cannot come to West Hollywood. So we're excited for that.
So it's actually going to be a Zoom?
Yes. Yes, it's going to be online on May 20th, and it's going to start at 10. And we'll have workshops, speakers. There's a collective aspect that we are doing. And we're going to have actions that people are going to take then. So we're excited about it because we want, you know, to collaborate with all the chapters.
Are you still looking for facilitators?
We might be still looking for facilitators, yes.
So I mean, I'll find out. I'll contact. We'll talk about that later. Well, Carmenina,
yes.
I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being on Women's Spaces. This has been very enlightening, and I congratulate you. I'm so happy that we have a strong president for now here in California, and hopefully we work together and just make it happen more and more. So thank you.
I'd love to. Thank you.
You have a wonderful day.
You too.
Well, that's it for our show, folks. Man, I'll tell you something. There's so much going along with women. I want to thank Carmenina Schwartz Davidson, who's the president of the National Organization for Women, the California chapter, for being such a great guest. This is Lane B. Holt. You've been listening to Women's Spaces. I look forward to listening and being with you the next time.
She knows everything you do because of
the previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, April 10th, 2023.